Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed by Richard Martin, Senior Vice President of Global Strategic Investments, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are entirely unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Hello everybody, this is Richard Martin here with our last get-together before Christmas. I thought I would start out today's proceedings with some comments which were made in the year 1955, that's 52 years ago, so we can get some perspective on life today. And so let's start with someone who said, "I'll tell you one thing, if things keep going on the way they are, it's going to be impossible to buy a week's groceries for $20. How about, "Have you seen the new cars coming out next year? It won't be long before $2,000 will only buy a used one. If cigarettes keep going up in price, I'm going to quit. A quarter a pack is ridiculous. Did you hear the post office is thinking about charging a dime just to mail a letter? If they raise the minimum wage to $1, nobody will be able to hire outside help at the store. When I first started driving, who'd have thought gas would someday cost 29 cents a gallon? Guess we'd be better off leaving the car in the garage. Kids today are impossible. Those ducktail haircuts make it impossible to stay groomed. Next thing you know, boys will be wearing their hair as long as the girls. I'm afraid to send my kids to the movies anymore. Ever since they let Clark Gable get by with saying damn in Gone with the Wind, it seems every new movie has either hell or damn in it. I read the other day where some scientist thinks it's possible to put a man on the moon by the end of the century. They even have some fellows they call astronauts preparing for it down in Texas. Did you see where some baseball player just signed a contract for $75,000 a year just to play ball? It wouldn't surprise me if someday they'll be making more than the president. I never thought I'd see the day all our kitchen appliances would be electric. They're even making electric typewriters now. It's too bad things are so tough nowadays. I see where a few married women are having to work to make ends meet. It won't be long before young couples are going to have to hire someone to watch their kids so that they can both work. Marriage doesn't mean a thing anymore. Those Hollywood stars seem to be getting divorced at the drop of a hat. I'm afraid the Volkswagen car is going to open the door to a whole lot of foreign business. Thank goodness I won't live to see the day when the government takes half our income in taxes. I sometimes wonder if we're electing the best people to Congress. The drive-in restaurant is convenient in nice weather, but I seriously doubt they will ever catch on. There's no sense going to Lincoln or Omaha anymore for a weekend. It costs nearly $15 a night to stay in a hotel. No one can afford to be sick anymore. At $35 a day in the hospital, it's too rich for my blood. If they think I'll pay 50 cents for a haircut, forget it. All right, well, what will they be saying in 52 years' time from now, one wonders. Okay. All right, so my name is Richard Martin. This is Richard Martin's wake-up call coming from Miami, Florida. Although, quite frankly, I think I'd be saying the same things if I came from Omaha, Nebraska. But anyway, Miami it is for me. My phone number, my private direct line, if you'd like to call me directly, is 305-357-5575. Let me repeat that. 305-357-5575. If you want my email address to email your concerns and questions, it is as follows. rmartin@gfcorporation.com. I will repeat that. Please remember all lowercase, the word corporation to be written out in full, and the GS stands for Global Strategic. Global Strategic Investments is the company where I work, Florida. Again, rmartin@gscorporation.com. And please, please, please feel free to call anytime during the hour to the station direct on our toll-free line to share your concerns and questions with other people listening to the show by calling 888-873-4643. I will repeat, 888-873-4643. All right, so one other little piece of housekeeping here, which is that we will have no show on Christmas Day, on next Tuesday. That's a week, 4 days from today. There will be no show. And thereafter, on the 27th, I will be away until the 5th. So the next show that I will be live on is on January the 8th. That's Tuesday, January the 8th. But, of course, there will be reruns made available. And, of course, as you know, the archives are being updated very nicely now. And you should be able to get today's broadcast certainly by tomorrow and all of the previous shows are available for your enjoyment. Okay. Now, two things for you. First of all, I am going to give you the name of an online e-book. An electronic book, it's free, and it's called Squeezed as the Bubble Bursts, and it's by Daniel Schechter, and Daniel Schechter was the person who whose movie I recommended to you back this summer, back I think in June or July, called In Debt We Trust, a very good movie. I hope you have had a chance to see it, some of you who were with me 6 months ago. It was very popular, and it was, of course, a fringe movie, but it nevertheless got a lot of attention. He has now written a book, which, as I say, is free online. Basically, it's about what has been happening over the last decade with U.S. industrial employment being ravaged by neoliberal free trade policies and corporate outsourcing, while workers have struggled to retain the basic vestiges of the American dream. Sadly, as the post-industrial society has eroded the industrial heartland of middle-class America, the mall has replaced the factory as the engine of the U.S. economy. Indeed, one of the distinguishing features of the new economy is that it is more profitable to finance consumption than production. And as real wages have declined and basic living expenses have soared, American families have become increasingly dependent upon consumer credit and debt to maintain their lifestyle and, too often, simply to survive. Through his movie and the compilation of his most perceptive articles in Squeezed, Schechter exposes the corporate forces that are corrupting our fundamental democratic institutions of governments through a symbiotic financial-industrial complex, financialization. As Schechter perceptively explains, debt is profitable in a deregulated economy where democratization of credit means the best consumer is someone who will never escape the vise of debt servitude. So this sounds like an interesting book. If you're wondering what to do over the holidays, read it. And I think it's about 181 pages long. As I say, it's free, and I am now going to give you the website address where you can locate it and download it on a PDF file. So, ladies and gentlemen, get out your pens and paper and take this down. I am going to repeat it twice, and so don't panic if you don't get it the first time. But it's actually very simple, and it's very short. It starts with www, as they all do, coldtype.net. That's C-O-L-D-T-Y-P-E, coldtype.net, / debt with a capital B. This is very important. All this, by the way, is lowercase, except the D of debt, followed by a / and the S of the next word, which is squeezed, which is big S, small, Q-U-E-E-Z-E-D, dot PDF. That's a PDF file. Now, remember, it's all lowercase except for two letters. The first letter of the word debt and the first letter of the word squeezed. And it is very important to get this right, because otherwise the thing won't come up. It's case sensitive. And I will repeat it again. Okay? All lowercase except for the D and the S. www.coldtype.net / debt / squeezed dot PDF. Okay? Coldtype is spelled C-O-L-D-T-Y-P-E, coldtype. All right, once more, I give you the website address. One last time, www.coldtype.net / debt / squeezed dot PDF. Okay, so enjoy it. That is my Christmas present to you, free from the internet. What a nice present. How lucky you are. Very good. Right, now the second piece of advice is formulated clearly and succinctly in my brain, and I will give it to you. And it is this: walk away and do it now, by which I mean, if you bought a house in 2005 and 2006 in the affected areas of the country, you must walk away from your house, and the sooner the better. It's the only sane decision you can possibly make as a human being. You know, sanity in this case means making decisions which are in your best interest. And I will now tell you what your situation is. You bought with a 3 to 5 year outlook. Now, as you know, no one pays principal or gains equity in the first 5 years, except through appreciation, which, of course, there is none. The 3 to 5 year outlook is bust. All right, maybe you bought with a 10-year outlook. No one pays principal in the first 10 years. No one gains equity either, except through appreciation. You are probably $100,000 to $150,000 in the hole on appreciation right now. You will have gained nothing by the end of 10 years. Okay, so what about 10 to 15 years out? Well, many people have built in balloon payments between $50,000 and $100,000 at 15 years. This will negate any equity or appreciation that could be possible in the 10 to 15 year range. So the situation is this. You are making higher payments than necessary on a home which is not worth what you paid, and you have no real expectation of capitulation in the next 15 years. If you're really unlucky, your payments may be going up next year or the following one. The only sane, rational, financial decision you can make for yourself and for your family is to walk away. Your bank is walking away. Wall Street is walking away. It's time for you to do the same. Put aside pride, ego, wishful thinking. The sooner you get this behind you, the better off you will be. If you could rescue your financial position and be creditworthy in 4 to 7 years, why would you, a sane person, continue to deplete your finite resources on a bad bet and a diminished future? The answer is you wouldn't. No sane person would. Time to walk away. Just walk away and have your dream another day. Now, I must, of course, present the other side of this argument. I must give you, you know, the alternative view. Okay? So, this is what someone might say in response to this who doesn't agree. They might say, a civil society depends upon trust between the members of that society. The founding principle of our society and its exercise of freedom is that we must exercise it while considering the good of others. These mortgages are not just bets. They are contracts with the promise of payment. Advising everyone to walk away is not only selfish, but if followed, would destroy both the financial and civil structure of those regions and perhaps the entire country. You are a fool if you think that divesting yourself of real estate assets will totally protect your personal assets. Like it or not, we are all in this together. When these financial institutions collapse, it will not be contained within narrow segments of the economy. The exposure is much broader than expected. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I've given you both sides. You know which side I believe in, and so for those of you who disagree with me, let it be said that I, preempted any criticism by giving you the other side of the story, and it's up to each and every one of you. And I'm, of course, talking about those of you who recently bought property. This does not apply necessarily. It doesn't apply to people who bought property like 5 years ago, but it may. And so each of you need to examine your situation and decide how you want to go with this. Okay, let me give you once more my toll-free number. It is 888-873-4643. Once more, 888-873-4643. All right, well, recently we've been speaking about the rating agencies and how immoral they really are, working as they are in their own interests and in the interests of what they like to think of as their clients rather than in the interests of people like you and me. So I thought I would talk a little bit more about these rating agencies because things are coming to a head with these companies. And I think you should know, what's going on. Recently, Standard & Poor's, in fact, a couple of days ago, cut its ratings on ACA Financial Guarantee Corp to junk as part of actions on 6 bond insurers. That, as I say, took place just on Wednesday, 2 days ago. They cut ACA's rating to CCC, or 8 levels below investment grade from A, the 6th highest investment grade rating. It also said it may cut Financial Guarantee Insurance Company's AAA rating. Officials from Merrill Lynch and Bear Stearns and other major banks are in talks to bail out a struggling bond insurance company that has guaranteed $26 billion in mortgage securities, according to 2 people briefed on the situation, because the insurer's woes could force the banks to take on billions in losses they had insured against. The banks that insured securities with the ACA Financial Guarantee Corporation will have to take back billions in losses from the insurer under the terms of the credit protection they bought from the company. The troubles at ACA could also serve as the first real test for credit default swaps, the tradable insurance contracts used by investors to protect or hedge against default on bonds. In June, the value of bonds underlying credit default swaps rose to $42.6 trillion, up from just $6.4 trillion at the end of 2004, according to the Bank for International Settlements, as I mentioned to you the other day when we talked about this in more detail. As I mentioned on Tuesday, the entire economy is $14 trillion or so, in contrast to the $14 trillion in contrast to the $42.6 trillion in credit default swaps. The entire derivatives trade soars to a record $681 trillion. There is obviously no way all the hedges can be paid. As you know, investment banks, hedge funds, and insurance companies often use credit default swaps to bet on or against bonds without trading the underlying securities. Warren Buffett and other critics have described the contracts as financial time bombs because they say that traders often misprice risk of default and do not set aside enough reserves to cover claims. They also note that investors have become complacent about the risks in recent years because default rates fell to historically low levels. Well, those time bombs are now going off. Oh, by the way, banks that insured securities with ACA have another reason to keep the company afloat. If it fails, they may have to restate earnings they have already booked as a result of their dealings with the company. Those earnings were a mirage. That mirage is what made the S&P 500 look so cheap. The S&P 500 was not and is not cheap because much of the earnings were a mirage based on hopelessly unsound financial engineering. ACA more than doubled its credit default business in the last 12 months. It had contracts outstanding on $70 billion in bonds on September the 30th, up from $30 billion a year ago. The timely use of credit default swaps this summer was what helped large investment banks like Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers avoid huge losses on mortgage securities, as others had billions in losses. But Jim Keegan, a senior vice president and portfolio manager at American Century Investments, questions whether the firms that sold protection will be able to pay up when losses materialize. It's a zero-sum game, he said, noting that the gains at the investment banks buying the protection have to eventually result in losses for the firms they hedged with. Quote, if you put trades on that work so well that you bankrupt your counterparty, you will not collect on those trades. You know, it's obvious here that the emperor has no clothes. There's going to be a global collapse in derivatives as soon as a key counterparty defaults. ACA is one such domino. It remains to be seen if it is the domino or not. Last week, the New York Stock Exchange delisted ACA Capital after its stock price had collapsed and the company declined to offer a plan to bring itself back into compliance with listing standards. The stock was trading at about 40 cents over the counter on Tuesday. It traded as high as $15 in the summer. But incredibly, and despite that, S&P kept its credit rating at A up until 2 days ago. Well, actions speak louder than words. It is clear the rating agencies are hopelessly and purposely behind the curve. One look at ACA should be enough to tell anyone that the reaffirmations by the rating agencies of AMBAC, MBI, and others are completely suspect at best and purposeful manipulation at worst. Well, it's time to break up the rating cartel. This is not the first time you are going to hear me say this, ladies and gentlemen. It has got to go. Any talk of a bailout of ACA is fantasy. Banks are so capital impaired that a bailout is impossible. If by some sleight of hand, shell game, they manage to pull it off, they will most likely have to do it again with MBIA and or AMBAC. With that in mind, I see MBIA just hit a new 52-week low. Neither AMBAC nor MBIA deserves the AAA ratings they have. However, the rating agencies do not want to downgrade MBIA and AMBAC because it would trigger the re-rating and possible forced sale of $2.5 trillion in municipal bonds. But the market will eventually force a downgrade of those companies, whether anyone likes it or not. Ladies and gentlemen, the financial day of reckoning approaches. All right, so time for a couple of questions, emailed questions. Laura Musgrove has just written me an email 4 minutes ago, and she says the following. Richard, I was listening to your show today, that's 1221, and you spoke about the bad real estate areas in the country. What are they? Is Cape Cod, Massachusetts in this group? I ask because I bought a house in 2004 in Dennis, Massachusetts, and have made large improvements. Thank you very much for all of your advice. Laura, I'm afraid it's very unfortunate that I must tell you that I really am not familiar with the various different areas of the country. I do know that Boston is in terrible dire straits, and I'm really thinking that Cape Cod, because of its second home nature, is probably in very grim straits as well. I know there are certain areas in the country which have a concentration of second homes that are particularly badly hit, because obviously second homes are the first to go in this kind of a downturn in the real estate market. So I would have to assume that Cape Cod is in that group. But of course, I don't know. It's very easy to get hold of the listings and to find out yourself. But if you want to contact me directly, we can discuss it. We can talk about your investments and the comps that are being sold right now from that area, but I'm not really able to give you a comprehensive answer to your question, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for calling, Bill. I have another question that came through on Tuesday, which I couldn't answer at that point, and it came from Walt Pfeiffer, and I promised you, Walt, that I would answer it today, and answer it I will. And I will just first of all read the question, which was, "Hi, Richard. My understanding is that Fed pumps money into the economy via repurchase agreements where money is auctioned to 21 dealers. These dealers then lend the money to the banks and other financial institutions. Currently, these dealers are unwilling to make loans to banks. Is the purpose of the term auction facility to replace these 21 dealers and make loans to banks? Who are these 21 dealers, and are they not lending to banks because they believe banks are a bad risk? This seems to be a big red flag concerning the safety of our banks. Do you agree? Have these 21 dealers ever acted this way before? Thanks for your excellent analysis, Walt." All right, Walt. Well, first of all, let's get some definitions here out of the way. First of all, what are primary dealers? Primary dealers are banks or securities broker-dealers who may trade directly with the Federal Reserve. Okay? These dealers purchase the vast majority of the U.S. Treasury securities sold at auction and resell them to the public. Okay? So who are these 21 dealers? You asked the question, who are they? Walt, here quickly is the list. I'm going to read it fairly fast. You won't have time to write it down, I'm afraid, but you asked, so in the spirit of cooperation, I will tell you who they are, 21 names. BNP Paribas Securities Corp, Bank of America Securities, Barclays Capital, Bear Stearns, Cantor Fitzgerald, Citigroup Global Markets, Countrywide Securities, Credit Suisse Securities, Daiwa Securities America, Deutsche Bank Securities, Dresdner Kleinwort Securities, Goldman Sachs, Greenwich Capital Markets, HSBC Securities, J.P. Morgan Securities, Lehman Brothers, Merrill Lynch, Mizuho Securities, Morgan Stanley, and UBS Securities. Okay, that's who they are. Next, I should explain what eight-term auction facility is, since you asked the question whether the purpose of the term auction facility is to replace these 21 dealers. Okay? So for the purposes of this deal, under the term auction facility program, that's TAF, the Federal Reserve will auction term funds to depository institutions against the wide variety of collateral that can be used to secure loans at the discount window. All depository institutions that are judged to be in generally sound financial condition by their local reserve bank and that are eligible to borrow under the primary credit discount window program will be eligible to participate in TAF auctions. All advances must be fully collateralized. Okay, so the answer to your question, Walt, is that by allowing the Federal Reserve to inject term funds through a broader range of counterparties and against a broader range of collateral than open market operations, this facility could help promote the efficient dissemination of liquidity when the unsecured interbank markets are under stress. Okay, so, you know, that's really where we're coming from. Yes, indeed. The 21 dealers do believe the banks are a bad risk, but also the banks are somewhat unwilling to borrow the money as well because they also have to set off that money against risks which they probably themselves perceive to be bad, and that's really the definition of our credit crunch that you're all hearing about and reading about in your papers. Nobody wants to lend money to anybody else. Walt, you say this seems to be a bit red flag concerning the safety of our banks. Do you agree? Yes, but not for that particular reason, although it's not helpful to have banks which won't lend to each other and won't lend to their customers. The dealers, these 21 dealers, have acted this way before. They acted this way in the 70s. They acted this way in the savings and loan crisis. And, of course, before that, in the Great Depression. So this is not unprecedented, but what is unprecedented, Walt, is the degree of debt involved, which makes the potential problem many, many times worse than it was in the past. So yes, this is a very serious condition, and I do thank you for your question. It was perhaps a little bit esoteric for some people, but hopefully you all got something out of it, mainly some information as to why we have this credit crunch, which is of course mortal to any economy, because if you can't borrow, especially if you can't borrow short-term funds, then corporations have a hard time financing their immediate needs, and this can broaden out into much more serious problems down the line. So what the government has been doing, Walt, is panicking. They're now bypassing these dealers and just going out directly to the appropriate receivers of the money and getting them to go directly to the clients and hoping it works that way. It's a forlorn hope, but it just goes to show how impotent the government is when it comes to dealing with crises. Very serious and very unfortunate. Okay, Frank Devlin forwarded me a piece last week, which was published in the San Francisco Gate, and it was written by Sean Ollander, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, who's a lawyer, and I thought I would discuss. It was rather interesting. It sort of piqued my attention, and so I did a little bit of research on that, and it ties in so much to what we're dealing with here. Basically, the world's largest banks are now trapped. I mean, you know, the sub-mortgage crisis constitutes the worst banking error probably ever, but certainly in my lifetime, nothing else comes close. And it has visibly begun to unravel. The European Central Bank on Tuesday, December the 18th, opened a line of credit of $500 billion. To commercial banks. This is an absolute first and clearly a sign of panic. The Federal Reserve, under that damnable Greenspan, was the prime initiator of these problems. It forced down short-term interest rates by supplying the overnight bank-to-bank loan market with sufficient liquidity to drop the rate to 1%. This encouraged banks to make loans at low rates. The loans were short-term loans. The borrowers then went out and bought long-term assets, in other words, bonds and mortgages, which is otherwise known, by the way, as the carry trade. And then through a complex combination of government-licensed monopoly through the Federal Reserve System, implied government safety nets for mortgage investors through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, creative finance, or asset-backed securities, and credit rating services that were either stunningly naive or compensated in ways not beneficial to objective analysis, brokers marketed a series of high-commission, fast-sale investment packages that sold like hotcakes until August 2007, and then, without any warning, they stopped selling. These packages had sold all over the world. European banks got in on the action, marketing these investment packages to their clients. Well, Americans have seen all this before. The savings and loan crisis of the 1980s, the SNLs were borrowed short, which were the depositors, lent long to the home buyers. Then the rules changed. The government in 1980 abolished Regulation Q, which had limited the rate of interest that banks and SNLs could pay to depositors, which began a rate war. The government at that point had little choice. Money market funds, which had been invented around 1975, were not under the banking system. They were not bound by Regulation Q. They were paying high rates on short-term money. Depositors were pulling funds out of banks and buying money market funds, and the banks were hemorrhaging. As soon as the banks could compete with money market funds, the SNLs were doomed. Their money was tied up for 30 years. Depositors, legally owners, were cashing in. It's a wonderful life without the honeymoon money. Then Congress stepped in with its own honeymoon money, about $500 billion, if you count interest on the national debt. That was the test of the mortgage carry trade. The system failed. We are now in the midst of another similar test. It is much larger. It is worldwide, ladies and gentlemen. It is affecting capital markets that were once far removed from mortgages. All right, I'm going to carry on talking about this, but in the meantime, we have two callers, and let's take Nancy in New York. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hello, Nancy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Boy, that sounds pretty grim. My question for you is, where do you think I should, what vehicle should I put some savings in, about $100,000, and then what vehicle should I use to fund college tuition?
Well, again, you know, it's funny. These questions demand so much further knowledge of your situation. Nancy, it's extremely hard to answer that specifically, but I can answer the first question very succinctly. Your money for savings should be, in my opinion, in short-term United States Treasury bills. Now, you can do that either through the purchase of those bills directly with Treasury Direct, as I've mentioned several times on this show, or you can simply use your current broker to go out and buy them for you. There is a third alternative, which is that you can just buy a money market fund. And you should find that your broker has a T-bill fund. Don't allow yourself to go into a commercial paper fund-based fund. It's got to be a money market fund based in United States Treasuries, because that's the only really secure way of being sure your money is going to be around. So that's my advice. Now,
CDs.
No, because the time will come when you can get much better prices for CDs. I mean, bonds are going to fall, I think, quite sharply on a very short-term basis, and then your CDs will be worth much more. So you want to have liquid funds with which to buy CDs sometime, probably in the first 6 months of next year, but at a much better rate of interest. So I wouldn't go for CDs right now. But when you do, don't forget, $100,000 maximum per CD, okay?
Okay. And in terms of college tuition funds?
I have no idea. That is going to be too hard to answer. It depends, you know, where your money is. It depends how you're deploying it. It depends, you know, how
much
money.
Well, I have a home that's fully paid for. There's no mortgage.
Well, I do still think that if you really want a concerted, specific, focused answer, you need to call me with that, Nancy, because we need to discuss maybe some changes in your portfolio to free up the money as and when. And I need to the details of the kids, you know, and how long where they're going to school, and all kinds of things that really can't be answered quickly in a question like that. You have my number. Call me at your leisure, you know, at your convenience, and we'll talk about it. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Daryl from the Bronx. Are you there?
Richard, happy holidays.
Well, thank you very much. Same to you.
Since you're bringing such great news, we just want to laud you for that. I tried to bring up that website Squeezed, and what I came across was something that I don't know if you're aware of. There's also a film. It's called The Cost of Free Trade in Asia and Pacific.
Doesn't sound like it, Daryl. This is the website I gave you just earlier on, right?
Right.
Read back the address. Make sure you've got the address. Just read it back to me.
Certainly, I will. I have holdtype.net/DEBT.
No, this is something else. This is definitely something else. I don't know where this came from.
I'm sorry. Oh, you wanted the website for the movie?
No, I wanted the website I gave you.
All right. Okay, that's not what you gave us?
Nope. The website I gave you was www.coldtype.net.
Oh, cold. That's it. I got it.
All right.
I had cold. I had H-O.
No H. There's no H.
I got it now. Thank you so much.
Cold and hot. What?
The other piece is you might want to take a look at this tradewatch.org. It's concerning the 2007 meeting of the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation, and its interviews with it's filmed in Thailand and the Philippines on the effect of the free trade agreement and globalization on the people of that region.
Okay, thank you very much.
And thank you so much for the work that you do. I really appreciate all your contribution.
Thank you, Dale. Appreciate it. Take care. Have a nice holiday. Bye-bye now. All right. Well, going back to this question of the banks and their problems, you've heard of ninja loans, you know, no income, no job or assets. These were loans made by local mortgage brokers to first-time homebuyers. Poor people were offered loans at rates far lower than conventional loans. The brokers told the prospective debtors that they could refinance later to get long-term loans. This was not put in writing, so it cannot be proven. But everyone in the industry knew it was being done. Therein lies the trap for America's largest banks. Everyone knew. If lawyers can persuade juries that everyone knew, America's largest banks are on the hook for more money in reparations than they have as capital. Why? Fraud. They sold investors, including European banks, investments known to be fraudulent. Here it is, folks. This is what we've dreamt about. The money-grabbing lawyers are about to wipe out the money-grabbing bankers. There is only one hitch. The world's economy could crash. Yeah. Well, now we come to the December 9th issue of the San Francisco Chronicle, which ran a great headline, Mortgage Meltdown. And the author, Sean Ollander, who is a lawyer that I mentioned and who Frank brought my attention to, he discusses the present bailout proposal and makes the point that it was not the first one. He describes earlier ones, saying, first, the Treasury Department urged the creation of a new fund that would buy risky mortgage bonds as a tactic to hide what those bonds were really worth. Not much. Then the idea was to use Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to buy the risky loans, even if it was clear that U.S. taxpayers would eventually be stuck with the bill. But that plan went south after Fannie suffered a new accounting scandal and Freddie's existing loan losses shot up more than expected. Now comes the freeze, the brainchild of Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. It sounds good. For 5 years, mortgage lenders will freeze interest rates on a limited number of teaser subprime loans. Other homeowners facing foreclosure will be offered assistance from the Federal Housing Administration. Sean Ollander is not persuaded by the sincerity of the offer. He perceives this as a judicial move, not an economic move. He sees it as the government's attempt to place a legal moat around the bank's castles. And I quote, "The sole goal of the freeze is to prevent owners of mortgage-backed securities, many of them foreigners, from suing U.S. banks and forcing them to buy back worthless mortgages securities at face value, right now almost 10 times their market worth. The ticking time bomb in the U.S. banking system is not resetting subprime mortgages rates. The real problem is the contractual ability of investors in mortgage bonds to require banks to buy back the loans at face value if there was fraud in the origination process. And to be sure, fraud is everywhere. It's in the loan application documents, and it's in the appraisals. There are emails and memos floating around showing that many people in banks, investment banks and appraisal companies, all their way up to senior management, knew about it." Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the supposed key to the prosecution. Everyone knew. If everyone knew, then defrauded investors have a legal case. Anyway, they would have a legal case if they were not trying to collect from the real masters of America, the multinational banks. And Ollander writes, "There are lots of people who would like to muzzle subpoena-heavy New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo to buy time and make all this go away. Cuomo is just inches from getting what he needs to start putting a lot of people in prison. I bet some people are trying right now to make him an offer he can't refuse." So you see, here we have an attorney general who understands how his immediate predecessor became the governor of New York, handing out lots of subpoenas to big business CEOs. Cuomo has a severe case of subpoena envy. Anyway, Mr. Ollander then gets to the heart of the matter, the bottom line. So what is the bottom line? The bottom line, and I quote, "The catastrophic consequences of bond investors forcing originators to buy back loans at face value are beyond the current media discussion. The loans at issue dwarf the capital available at the largest U.S. banks combined, and investor lawsuits would raise stunning liabilities sufficient to cause even the largest U.S. banks to fail, resulting in massive taxpayer-funded bailouts of Fannie and Freddie and even FDIC. Well, you see, I see what he's getting at. There appears to be fraud at every level. But this, it seems to my judicially untrained eye, is the very loophole the banks need. If everyone knew, as seems likely, and nobody blew the whistle, which is clear in retrospect, then these practices were common. If they were common, then they were not criminal. The government knew, and the government did nothing. Ditto for the Federal Reserve, the controller of the currency, every other regulatory agency, federal, state, and local. When a criminal conspiracy acts in a criminal fashion, it can be prosecuted. But when a criminal conspiracy has been licensed by the government and has de facto run the government of every major nation for a century, it will be difficult to get a conviction. None dare call it criminal. Okay, well, thank you, Frank, for that. We are rapidly approaching the end of our time together today. And I must tell you that I just received the latest update from Hedge Fund Guy, which I faithfully reproduce here. "Dear investor, we'd like to update you on this year's performance of our hedge fund, Short-Term Capital Mismanagement, LLP. Actually, we'd prefer not to. We'd rather disappear. We read somewhere that Panama is a really nice place to retire to, but our lawyer says that would be a bad idea. So here goes. This has been without doubt the most turbulent period we have experienced in our 15 minutes of multi-strategy, multi-asset class, Bentley-driving hedge fund manager fame. Our Widows and Orphans Enhanced Money Market Fund is under investigation by the Federal Trade Commission. It seems our use of the word enhanced is deemed incompatible with really sorry we gambled that dollar you gave us for safekeeping on collateralized debt obligations and ended up losing a cent or seven or 20. We're not entirely sure yet. Our structured investment vehicle has burst its tires and looks like it was designed by a teenager on acid after seeing one too many documentaries about Frank Gehry. Our off-balance sheet conduits have maxed out their MasterCards, and every time we try to value them, we are reminded that some things in life really are priceless. Our only investment that made money in December was our long position in Led Zeppelin concert tickets. Nevertheless, we are proud, nay, ecstatic, nay, absolutely flabbergasted, to report that our fund is still sashaying on the dance floor, which looks less and less like a ballroom and more like the aftermath of a frat party. Kayaking to Panama. Admittedly, we broke a heel an hour ago. The rip in our tutu threatens to reveal more about us than money ever can. And the sick, dizzy feeling has nothing to do with the seventh banana daiquiri and everything to do with the year-end money market rates. We can still hear music, though, even if it does sound increasingly like a funeral march. Frankly, there have been times when we've considered leaving a pile of clothes on the beach, climbing into a shiny red kayak and paddling away for 5 years. Did we mention what a nice retirement destination Panama is? It's just a shame that we lost the paddle when we headed up SIV Creek all those months ago. You know the saying, pay peanuts, get monkeys? It isn't true. We've been paying our traders peanuts since the fund's inception, and it turns out that the annual rate of nut inflation is killing us at 11.5%, given how low our investment returns have been. Memory chimps. So we're shifting to bananas to hire some real chimps. Not just any chimps, though. Memory chimps. You may have seen some on television recently, thrashing college kids in memory tests. Hell, these chimps can buy and sell and eat a banana simultaneously, whereas Bob, our recently departed mortgage bond trader, couldn't even walk and chew gum at the same time without blowing the P&L on some cockamamie subprime debt security. We figure these five-year-old chimps might have a better chance of remembering stuff like Russia's default or the savings and loan crisis or the collapse of long-term capital management from their financial market history classes. They can't be any worse than the monkeys who decided to bet on the creditworthiness of U.S. bond insurers last month. Still, we remain optimistic about the coming year. That's mostly because while Santa Claus only pops down the chimney once a year with his sack of presents, helicopter Ben Bernanke flies by every 6 weeks and showers us with bags of cash in the form of lower interest rates. Uncle Ben's umbrella. God bless the policymakers at the Federal Reserve. As Grammy nominee Rihanna would undoubtedly have sung if she only knew of our plight, they're gonna cut rates forever now that it's raining more than ever so we can stand under Ben's umbrella, ella, ella. Not like those monetary fascists at the European Central Bank. Just because inflation is running at a six-year high and money supply growth is the fastest in almost three decades, they didn't just close the lending window, they slammed it shut on our grasping hands. How can they contemplate an interest rate increase at a time like this? Finally, a cautionary tale. It is customary at this festive time of year for our schedule to be even busier than usual as our brokers escort us to the finest establishments in town and ply us with drink in gratitude for this year's business and in anticipation of the trades that will flow their way next year. Oddly, the telephone hasn't rung, and the mailbox is bereft of embossed invitations. It seems our relationship managers are too busy schmoozing their new clients in Dubai and Singapore and Shanghai and Abu Dhabi to bother with their old hedge fund customers. Fine, don't come crying to us, Mr. Hokey Cokey Bank, when the combination of a plummeting share price and a devaluing dollar makes your institution a takeover target for some sovereign wealth fund turbocharged by petrodollars. Yours, Hedge Fund Guy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for 2007. Let me wish you all a wonderful Christmas and New Year. And as always, I urge you to do whatever you can to make 2008, which, by the way, will be a very, very trying year, as tolerable as you possibly can. I will be back on the 8th of January, and of course, I remain here as always, to answer your questions. I will continue to receive my emails. You can call me, just sit back, relax, enjoy yourselves, have a great time, and I will see you next year. So this is Richard Martin, Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, saying bye-bye, a wonderful time, and all the very best for 2008.